other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for the best morning show on the internet. It's time for Sam in the Morning with Brigetta, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today is April 20th and no Brigetta today. She's had some car problems this morning, but she'll probably call in for a few minutes, so that's okay. Now, you guys know I probably should never do a show on my own, but I do have a special guest in the studio, so we'll get to him in just a minute. Today is April 20th. It's known as 420 as well. And for those of you who don't know, this is a reference to marijuana. So, and we'll find out exactly why 420 and not 521 or something. So we'll find out about that. Now, this weekend, there is, what's on the weekend? Oh, I totally forgot. Okay, so never mind. Anyway, let's bring in our guest, Mark Haskell-Smith. Good morning.
Good morning.
And thanks. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Now, Mark, I read your review on your book in the Wall Street Journal a few days ago. Your book is called The Heart of Dankness, Underground Botanists, Outlaw Farmers, and the Race for the Cannabis Cup.
Yep.
Quite a mouthful. But so I read it in the Wall Street Journal, and I thought it was a great book, and unfortunately never got a copy of it.
Yeah.
But that's okay, because we'll still talk about it, and I'm sure I'm going to get a copy afterwards. I'm not going to pass on that.
I'll have to get on Random House to send you one.
Yeah. So I see the book's been reviewed by the LA Review of Books, Book List, Kirkus Reviews, Publishers Weekly, and then you sent me a New York Times link.
Yeah, I was in the New York Times. I was in the New York Times yesterday. There was a little interview with me about in the home and garden section.
Yeah, right. That's the appropriate place, right?
Right? Exactly.
Yeah. So, so how did you? How were you able to get all these interviews? You must have a good publicist, huh?
Well, they've been working really hard, especially in Canada. We've been getting a lot of, I was on several TV shows up there and the CBC radio and even the National Post, which is one of their major newspapers, is pulling excerpts and for 3 days. Today is the last day of that. So,
really?
You know, but we just started, yeah. You know, this is
Yeah, the book just came out, right?
Yeah, it came out like, about a week ago.
Yeah, April 3rd. Wow, this is cool. So now, how long did it take you to write this book?
Well, I was given a one-year deadline, but I sort of had an advantage that I'd written a novel called Baked, which was about the Cannabis Cup a little bit, but it was a novel. Okay. So I'd visited and I'd, you know, done my research with that, and I'd met some of the people there that I profile in the book, some of the guys in the seed business in Amsterdam, and I'd met some growers in California. So I'd kind of been introduced to these people. And so when they said, you know, you have a one-year deadline, it was a little daunting, but it wasn't like starting from nothing.
Yeah. So who is they? Who told you it has to be done within a year?
Oh, my editor. Yeah.
Your editor?
The publishing house, yeah.
Yeah. So you've been writing for a long time, right? Four novels, and you'd written for the LA Times as well?
I contribute off and on for the LA Times. Mm-hmm. You know, I did a little piece about the Cannabis Cup, which led, you know, helped lead to this book. So, right. And before that, I was, you know, a screenwriter, and I just do whatever.
Got scripts like everybody does, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, what's the Cannabis Cup? For those who don't know, give us a little bit of explanation on that.
Yeah, the Cannabis Cup happens every year in Amsterdam around Thanksgiving.
Right.
And next year will be the 25th anniversary of it, and it is kind of like a cross between a state fair, county fair, mm-hmm. and the Olympic Games or the World Cup. It's all the best growers and underground botanists, people who develop new flavors and new tastes in marijuana, all get together and they have a blind tasting. It's just like the Concours Mondial in Brussels for wine.
Right.
It's like that for cannabis.
Wow. So that's pretty cool. I mean, it's like a big party when you go there.
Yeah, it is a very big party.
Yeah.
But also they're serious too. I mean, if you win, it can mean a lot of money.
Really?
Oh yeah,
like the Oscars, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Pardon me.
No.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. You know. So, do you go to Amsterdam often?
I in researching the book, I made I went to two cups, and then I rented an apartment for a while there and stayed there.
You did? Wow, yeah. How cool. You know, usually when I go there, it's like for 3-4 days, and I always want to stay longer. You know, it's a beautiful city anyway.
It's a fantastic city. Yeah,
yeah. It's a great place to have something like that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the Dutch have a lot of smart things going on in their society. You know, they're very open and tolerant and it's just a beautiful, one of the cultural capitals of Europe. It's just a beautiful place.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. They call it playground for adults, you know, because there's so much going on there and stuff. But yeah, you know what I was hearing, though, I was reading about this, that the Dutch government is actually thinking of banning tourists from going to coffee shops.
Yeah.
Have you heard of that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know about it. The genesis of that is pretty funny because there are some border towns in Holland where on Friday and Saturday night, all the French and German tourists come across the border to load up for the weekend on all their cannabis supplies.
Right.
And it causes terrible traffic gridlock.
Really?
And so the people who live in these little towns are like, okay, I can't even get to the grocery store because of all these French people buying weed. and they complained, and that complaint sort of went up the chain of Dutch politics, and eventually they said, okay, well, we'll ban tourists from going there and we'll stop this traffic problem.
Right. Except they're going to really hurt their tourism, because I would imagine a lot of people go there especially to smoke marijuana and to see the cannabis cup and things like that.
Yeah, Amsterdam and Rotterdam, the bigger cities are fighting this. It's not been enacted yet, except in two little border towns. They're really fighting it because it's the second largest industry in Holland.
Really?
The cannabis industry. Yeah, it's a 2 billion euro a year turnover. They pay something like 400 million euros in taxes. And that's not even counting the restaurants and hotels and the flights on KLM that come
in.
I mean, it's a huge industry. I don't think they can just turn it off.
Right. I don't think so either, you know. So now, I mentioned before the 420 thing, and I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but I'm reading here on CNN. They're trying to explain why it's called 420. Do you have any idea?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the legend of 420, the legend is that there were these high school kids in San Rafael in the Bay Area, and you know, school ended at 4, so they would all meet at 4:20 in the park and smoke a joint.
Really?
And it just sort of like, so 4:20 became like, hey, 4:20, and they'd be like, of course, you know, and so it just became code for them.
Yeah.
And then some of them started working for the Grateful Dead or knew people involved with the Grateful Dead, and that became a code for the Grateful Dead.
Oh, really?
And yeah, and so it just it just grew out of that over the last, you know, 30, 40 years.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know why some people think it's a police code, you know, for people that smoke marijuana.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about that?
No, it's not a police code at all.
It's not a police code.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a big urban legend, I guess, you know. You know what's funny is I guess in Boulder, Colorado today, some students were going to strike at 4:20, you know, for the legalization of marijuana, and everybody's looking forward to smoking there and stuff. So, but the school is trying to discourage that.
Yeah.
So they put like lawn fertilizer.
I read that.
Did you read about that? That's a good idea, though, if you don't want people hanging out there, you know.
I don't know, to be provocative like that with what should be a peaceful gathering is, you know, there are 420 celebrations on almost every college campus all around the country.
Really?
I mean, UC Santa Barbara, where my daughter went to college, there is always a big gathering at 4:20 on 4:20.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah. So even you're saying it happens even in the states where it's not legal yet?
Yeah. Oh,
really?
Yeah, yeah.
They just do it, huh?
They just do it. I mean, that's the one thing about, you know, we can talk about the laws, the prohibition of cannabis and the laws now. But, you know, what I found in my research is basically everybody smokes.
Right.
You know, whether they smoke like once every few years, someone's got to join in a party and they have a puff, or they smoke every day. It's just like almost everybody in the United States smoked.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some surveys they found something like 47% of people, you know, admit to it.
And, wow. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think it's probably another, you know, 47% who have and don't admit to it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. We'll get back to that in just a second. We have a phone call. Let's see. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, hello.
Hello, Brigetta.
Yes.
You sound different on the phone.
I'm actually sitting here at Midas waiting for my car to be fixed because I almost got into an accident last night.
Oh, that's very nice, Brigetta. Very nice. I'm glad you're in one piece.
I know. Yeah. But I wanted to call in and say I miss you. And
obviously, you don't know what we're talking about, but
I have no idea. No, because I'm sitting at Midas. But fill me in, and I can
get our goddamn app and listen to it. What are you doing? You know,
you
can listen anywhere.
I guess I need to figure that part out.
Yeah. But at any rate, I have Mark Haskell-Smith in the studio, and we're talking about marijuana and 420 and all that. So you missed a good show.
Oh,
what can I tell you? Yeah.
Clearly, I did.
Yeah. Now, in your experience, Mark says that almost everybody smokes marijuana. Do you find that? Because you have a lot of friends. You meet a lot of people. Do you find that a lot of people smoke?
Yeah, you know what? I think everyone in their life at least tries it or goes through a stage in their life where they do that for a while and then they kind of like grow out of it, or they kind of become like, you know, like I have good friends my age now that have smoked it for years. It's like they can't even function unless they like spark one up in the morning. But for me, yeah, I went through a crazy stage. I say back in college years, and I was like painting and drawing and writing, and it was pretty awesome, but I can't do it anymore. It makes me crazy.
Really?
It makes me like, yeah. Like, I'll smoke, and then I'll see like a tree in the middle of the road. I'm like, that's not a tree in the road. There's no, it doesn't make sense. And it's like, it's weird. It's like, I don't know, something crazy magical is like happening, and it's not. And then I get sick the next day.
Yeah. Now, Mark, do you find that some people that you've met and stuff really feel they can't function without smoking? I mean, it's probably like sort of a crutch that people use. You know, what do you think of that?
Well, I want to know what Brigetta is smoking, but...
I know, we could do some of that, too.
You know, it's like, obviously, even the guy who's the creative director of High Times once said about 420 was that, you know, he thought, you know, you should work during the day, and at 420 is a good time to actually then smoke, because you've been responsible, you've done whatever you needed to do, and then you can relax.
Right.
And so sometimes people say 420 is for that. I think a lot of people, like anything, they have a crutch. You know, some people can't get up without a cigarette. Some people have a drinking problem. They have to have a drink in the morning.
Right.
I think anytime you're using anything to sort of get through the day, starting with it in the morning, you know, you should look at what's causing that problem.
Right.
Not necessarily it's not really the marijuana that causes the problem. There's something else going on.
Yeah, that's what I think. You know, and I think some people maybe mental illness or mood disorders or things like that. And, you know, I mean, I've known of people that actually this has helped, you know. It's more than just a partying type of a thing.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know what's crazy is when I do it, I actually get really down and out the next day. Like it's like it helps me maybe momentarily, and then the next day my serotonin level is completely shot, and I'm all the way down, and I'm moody, and I'm depressed, and it's awful. And that's why I don't do it anymore. I haven't done it in years.
Yeah.
Because of those reasons, which I think is interesting.
Yeah. Now, Mark, what do you think about that? Do you find that happens to people?
Yeah, I mean, it really, there's different kinds of marijuana, and there's one kind called indica, which is really relaxing and makes you sit on the couch. It gets you stoned.
Right.
And I don't, my metabolism doesn't deal with that particular strain well at all. It just puts me to sleep.
Right.
And I think a lot of people have that, you know, if they smoke that, which is what's the common strain in California, they can have those problems, because it does make you a little sluggish and a little kind of what they call couch lock.
Right, yeah. You need some sativa, Brigetta,
exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
I tried that, I think, like once before, and then, I don't know. I just don't like the feeling it gives me. I like being in control, so that's kind of my thing, I'm a control freak.
Right.
So if I'm drinking, I know that I can have one drink or two drinks or whatever my limit is, and I'm fine. Or I can, if I want to get sober, I puke it up or I eat food. Hey,
right.
with smoking, it's like you can't. Like, there's no puking it up.
Yeah.
No, you just have to wait it out, and that just freaks me out. And I've eaten things before where it's like you're spinning like crazy and you're so sick, and it's like, oh my God, when is this going to end, you know?
Yeah.
So not a big fan, but right. I do miss the creativeness that I used to get, and I used to paint all the time, and it was like I went through this period where I did feel like I had to smoke all the time in order to paint.
Right.
So that became like not, you know, like a thing I had to do back in the day. I felt like I wasn't creative until I did it.
Right.
And so I kind of miss like the creativity with painting and everything, but besides that,
right?
You know,
You gotta remember that. I mean, you smoke occasionally, you know, and I think that's why you totally like freak out and stuff. I think if you smoke regularly, Mark, it's probably not as bad, right? Because you sort of like get used to it. Just like, yeah, just like with you drinking, you know. I mean, the thing is, I could drink, like, get really drunk because I like to be in control too. But when I smoke marijuana, I am in control, you know. So it's different for different people.
And you know what happens is that people chronically over medicate. You know,
right.
They just smoke too much. I mean, you wouldn't buy a bottle of tequila and then sit down and drink the whole bottle.
That's
but
true.
A lot of people will buy a gram of weed and they'll sit down and smoke the whole gram. And so when they really should have like one or two hits, you know.
Yeah, so you got to know your limit, I guess.
Yeah.
Now,
I guess so.
Now, Brigetta, we'll let you go back to the car and everything. I don't want to keep you on the phone for forever. But, have yourself a great weekend, Brigetta. You know.
Thank you. You too. And
yeah.
I will see you guys on. I'll see you on Monday.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
Happy 420.
Yeah.
I hope you guys like spark up a nice one after the show or something.
Yeah. You see, I'm glad I have a very interesting guest. Otherwise, I don't know what I would have done without you here. So so there we go.
I know, but I feel bad. At least my car is being done. I'm literally sitting here. I might have.
Yeah, you don't want to drive with your. Yeah, you don't want to drive without brakes. That's it's pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really scary. And I waited to the last minute. It's my own fault. But welcome to my world.
Yeah, there you go.
Alrighty. Well, have a great show, guys. Have a great weekend. And I will see you on Monday.
Okay, sounds good. Take care.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Bye. So going back to the conversation, God, there's so much I want to talk about. So now, I mean, obviously now in California, it's legal for medical reasons, and Colorado and several other
right.
states. Now, how long has it been legal in California for medical reasons?
Almost 15 years.
15 years.
Yeah.
Wow. And some people only now discover that they can actually medicate with it.
Yeah. I think that it's only the boom in dispensaries on the street. You know, I just walked past one on my way here to your studio.
Yeah.
I think that sort of took people by surprise.
Mm.
And then they thought, oh, this is a new law. But it's actually been around since, I think, 96.
Really?
Yeah.
And people in the past have tried to strike it down and everything, right? But it's still...
It's pretty strong. I mean, Gray Davis signed it. First, there was just a proposition that passed, and it passed pretty clearly. And then Gray Davis, when he was governor, signed it into law. And it's a law. I don't think it's been challenged too much. Only the federal government doesn't like it.
Yeah.
But instead of trying, you know, they just go around and try to arrest people. So.
Right. Now, what's behind that? I mean, that's a big loaded conversation and stuff about the federal government, why it's illegal and so forth. Why do you think they're so bent on keeping it illegal like this and actually get into people's lives, fill the prisons with people that shouldn't be there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you look at the history of cannabis, it used to be legal. And in the 30s, this group of people were worried about Mexican immigration. So they decided, and what did the Mexicans bring with them? Was marijuana. And so they were talking about like, oh, these Mexicans with their loco weed, how can we get rid of them? And so they passed the Cannabis Tax Act. So you needed a special stamp to grow.
And when was that?
1937.
I see, okay.
So what happened was, it still wasn't illegal, but you needed a stamp to grow it, and they just didn't issue any stamps, except during World War II when they needed it for rope and parachute fabric. And but what happened was, so it started out as this kind of racist thing, and then it you know, the cannabis smoking went on to, like, you know, African American community and then the college campuses. And so basically what happened was that, you know, President Nixon and then later President Reagan, and even all the Democrats actually, they use it as a form of social control. It's really the only thing you can do to oppress this counterculture that could be, you know, have a, be even more vital and challenge the status quo a little bit. But they just use this, these drug laws as a way to just keep people in jail. They're, you know, and I think when taxpayers if taxpayers realized that our money is being used to keep people in prison for basically gardening,
right,
they would become outraged. You know, and they just don't get it. They go, well, it's a, they violated the drug law. It's like, no, they were, you know, growing a plant, a non-toxic plant,
right,
a flower,
right. And that's a question. Why is there a law in the first place there? You know, I mean, it totally doesn't make sense, because if alcohol is legal, and many people that are into marijuana are saying this, if alcohol is legal, then marijuana can be just as legal.
Oh, absolutely. And right. And President Nixon hired, he commissioned Pennsylvania Governor Schaefer to do a special report on the evils and dangers of cannabis. And they found out that, hey, guess what? It's non-toxic. It's safer than alcohol. It doesn't cause addiction, at least not physical addiction. And right. And Nixon said, he has famously said, that's not the report I wanted.
Right.
And he kept it illegal. I mean,
really?
You
so
know,
that's not what he wanted to hear.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only people who win now are the private prison corporations and organized crime.
That's true. That's true. I mean, I don't see how the government benefits from this. From banning this, outlawing it.
You know, President Obama has been, you know, twice as bad as President Bush ever was on this issue.
Really?
And he's someone who said, you know, famously said, I inhaled, that was the point.
Right.
So you're kind of going, well, dude, what's, you know, what's up with all this stuff? But I think that there's a lot of, there's lobbyists that are paid for by private prison corporations, but, you know, the United States, we have 5% of the world's population. We have 25% of the world's prisoners.
Wow.
I mean, we're there's something really wrong with our society if we're locking all these people up.
Right. And many of them are for drug offenses, right?
Most of them are.
Right.
For basically gardening, smoking a flower, or, you know, trafficking in it, because it's a huge, huge business.
Right.
I mean, it is the largest, I mean, this, I'm getting off topic, but it's the largest cash crop in the country.
Really?
By far.
Wow.
Yeah, it's, you know, they figure even just the L.A. area alone, it's something like $2 billion to $3 billion a year.
Wow, just L.A., huh?
Yeah, if you take the medical and the illegal stuff together.
Yeah.
So it's a huge business. People are going to be involved with it. So the government, instead of like regulating it and taxing it, is spending billions of dollars putting people in prison.
Yeah, and especially, you know, in spite of the fact that many states are legalizing it, and, you know, the federal government is still involved in this and trying to fight those things.
I mean, well, right now in November, I think it's Washington, Oregon, and Colorado have legalization on the ballot, but 16 states have medical marijuana programs,
right,
of some form or another.
I just figured, you know, I think we sort of like crossed the line. I think once it became like acceptable for medical reasons, wouldn't you say it's a matter of time before it'll be legalized here?
I think so. I think we're hitting a tipping point.
Right.
I think more, you know, when they poll people, just general people around the country, they say yes, it should be legalized. And a lot of people might say, well, what about the kids and how do we, you know? But it's like, by regulating it and legalizing it, like we do alcohol, you know, that helps keep it out of kids' hands, you know, as much as you know anything can.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the kids that want to smoke, they find it, you know. I think they find it more easily than you and I would if there wasn't that medical marijuana.
Kids, they're always, you know, I don't know, when I was a kid, if I wanted to have a beer, I always found a way to get one.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly. And so I mean, that explains it. Now so the federal government has, are they enforcing this heavily? The fact that they don't want it to be legalized, and, you know, despite, like, for example, do they raid a lot of California places?
Yeah, they have.
They do.
They just had a famous raid up in Oakland.
In Oakland?
There's a college called Oaksterdam University.
Right. Where,
and there's a chapter in my book about it because I went there and took classes and I wrote about it.
What's the guy? The name of the guy that runs it?
Richard Lee.
Yes. Okay. He's like a big advocate.
Yeah, he's the guy who bankrolled Prop 19.
Really?
And I think that's pretty much why he was targeted.
Oh, really?
Because he, you know, he's an advocate. There's a Canadian guy named Mark Emery who sold seeds to people across the border, right?
So
people,
right.
People would send him money. He'd send him some seeds, and he made a lot of money, but he put a lot of it into legalization and activism and advocacy, and basically. He was arrested on a U.S. warrant and extradited from Canada for something. It's a crime up there.
Selling seeds.
It's a fine in Canada. He's serving 5 years in Mississippi.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think what happens is on one hand, if you're kind of a quiet dispensary, they might let it slide or something. But I think the people who are standing up and saying this should be legal, I'm putting my money where my mouth is. The DEA is cracking down on them.
Yeah. Now the dispensaries, you brought that up. There's some that are illegal, right? As far as dispensaries, or is everybody pretty much licensed?
I think they're all. I don't know. I think most of them are licensed and regulated by the cities. Some might pop up, you know.
Yeah.
And
In Chatsworth, for example, they closed all of theirs. Did you read about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is that about? I mean, were those like unlicensed ones or?
No, I think they just changed the zoning laws.
Really?
Yeah. There's a new law going through the state Senate now. It just came out of committee to sort of guarantee that patients and dispensaries can't be closed down by local ordinances. Mm. You know, like you have a right to do it. The citizens of the state want this. So you can't then say, well, you're 999 feet from a church.
Yeah.
You've got to close your doors. I mean, I think a lot of it's a signage problem. If you didn't have a sign, it was just like some business called organic herbal spa, no one would care.
No one would even know, huh?
Yeah, no one would know. You put a big green cross up and flashing neon marijuana leaves, and all of a sudden the city council's like going, yeah, we need to close these places.
Yeah, I know. And all the holier-than-thou people don't like it near their homes, you know.
Yeah. They say it brings crime and stuff, but I think they really just don't understand.
Yeah, I don't see how it brings crime if you're making it legal and people can actually transact with it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So how many, do you know, what's your estimate? How many dispensaries are like in L.A.?
Well, I think at the height, maybe a year ago, there were 800.
800 of them.
And then they tried to close. I think they closed down about 400 of them.
Oh, really?
So now we've got about 400.
So now who closed those? Were these federal agents that did that, or
local? The city council, you know, tried to. They were like, "It's a wild, wild west. We've got to stop it," you know.
Yeah, I know. That's what I've been reading. And then they go around, and is it like randomly they close them, or?
It seemed to be fairly random because they closed some that were really well run, that had really taken care to make sure that the products they had there were clean and, you know, not contaminated and stuff. So it wasn't the most thoughtful. It was a knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah.
You know, like all these things.
Yeah, I guess, you know. And from what I understand, those dispensaries, they're not allowed to make a profit. Is that correct?
I think the law says they should all be nonprofit. Yeah.
So why would they open it? I mean, why would you open one?
Well, you could still pay yourself a salary and be a nonprofit. I mean,
that's true.
And I think a lot of the people, I mean, I think obviously there's some people are in it for the money because you can make a lot of money in that business. There are other people who actually really believe the plant helps people. And they have, you know, there's a lot of evidence, medical and anecdotal evidence that it does.
Right.
And they're actually trying to help people and give them the best possible, you know, cannabis they can grow and find.
Right. You know? Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, people are trying to say, you know, for medical reasons, it's OK, but not for recreational. It's like, why should there be a difference there? You know, I mean, why is it not OK to smoke this thing for recreation?
It's one of those semantic things.
Right.
Like for me, it's, you know, marijuana is one of the best stress relievers in the world.
Right.
And it has no calories, right? So, you know, you come home from
than chocolate.
Yeah. You come home from a hard day work, you have a couple of puffs, and you relax.
Right.
Right. to me, that could be a medical use if you have a stressful job or a stressful life. But I think what's happened is that for so long, the government has said marijuana is bad, marijuana is bad. You know, Ronald Reagan said one marijuana cigarette does to your brain what an H-bomb did to the Bikini Atoll. You know, it's like so they can't then say, oh, we were wrong. You know,
right.
So they have to say, well, yeah, but oh, that was marijuana, but this is medical marijuana. It's a totally different thing, and that's okay if your doctor says it's okay.
Right.
It's like how they, you know, I always like to think that the government is like that grumpy guy who knows he's driving in the wrong direction, but he won't stop and ask anyone for directions, and he'll never turn around.
Yeah. Right? You know? He's just going to stay there because he wants to be right.
Yeah, he's stubborn. He's not going to admit that he made the wrong turn.
That's true. Yeah. Well, let's turn to your book a little bit. Heart of Dankness. What's dankness?
Well, that's a good question.
Dankness,
it depends who you ask, which is what I found fascinating and why one of the reasons that I wrote the book is like you can ask some people what dankness is and they'll say it just means good or awesome or great. And other people are like, oh, no, it's a kind of marijuana that's sticky, has like a peculiar, you know, really pungent odor. But as I went to Amsterdam and started meeting real connoisseurs, people who, not that they're more connoisseurs than other people, but you know, they own coffee shops and it's their business, right? They would start talking about things like, you know, well, you can take the great genetics, right, and you can grow it in a really artisanal way. You know,
right.
Like perfectly grown, organically treated cannabis. And that's great. But then for it to be dank, you have to be with like friends on a nice day and listen to like music that you like, or maybe have a little wine and food with it. And then that becomes, so it's a dank becomes a situation.
Right.
And then other people, especially in Europe, think that dank is a culture that like, you can be a skateboarder in Buenos Aires or a banker in Dusseldorf or, a stockbroker in New York. But since you all smoke something that's illegal around the world, you kind of bond over this thing.
I see.
You know, you have a connection to these people. And so and it's your relationship to the plant. And that is what dankness is. It's this underground culture that no one can see.
Oh, I see.
Except
okay.
for people who are in it.
So it's not just the quality of the marijuana or anything. It's more like you said, the subculture type of a thing.
Yeah, but it just depends who you ask. Like you
right.
can get all different kind of things. Some people say dank just means, you know, really stinky.
Yeah. So what did you mean by the title, Heart of Dankness? That's pretty much like you went where everything's happening.
Yeah, I tried to follow, you know, it was a joke on Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness. You know, he goes up the river in Vietnam to find, you know, this tribe. And so I sort of went up the metaphorical river to find the people who are really making the best cannabis in the world and to see what they did and how they did it. And I mean, they're fascinating. I mean, one of the guys I talked to and I feature in the book is named Franco, and he's an former Italian paratrooper, lives in Holland now, and he travels the world looking for pure, unadulterated strains. Like, he'll go to Malawi. He was just in Swaziland last week, or Jamaica, and he'll find little patches of plants and take the seeds back to Holland. And, you know, he's one of these kind of guys who's just a real connoisseur and a real, like, fanatic for the plant. And,
right.
And
So this pretty much grows everywhere, huh?
Yeah.
So he goes to like third world countries and finds like different new strains and things like that.
Yeah, or just or really old strains.
Yeah.
That's what they're looking for now. It's sort of like heirloom tomatoes, right?
Yeah.
They're looking for these things that have been lost.
Right. Now, I wanted to ask you, you know, I mean, when you do like a wine tasting or something, it also has a taste, you know, in addition to the buzz you get from it. But how do you judge good marijuana from bad marijuana? I mean, is that like the extent to which it can get you high, or how high you get? I mean, is that how you measure
it? It's more like wine. It's because they're flowers, right? So a well-grown and well-dried flower is going to have a distinct smell. It's going to have a distinct flavor when you smoke it. And depending what strain you smoke, they have completely different effects.
Really?
You know, like a sativa is very uplifting and can makes you get you high, but it makes you want to also do stuff and talk to people and, you know, clean your house or whatever. So all those smells are different. So like a strain called Super Lemon Haze, which won 2 cannabis cups in a row, it's got a really distinct, you know, citrus flavor. Mm. It's almost like, you know, like when you have like a lemon vodka.
Right.
You know, it's got that citrus tone. It smells like that, and you actually can taste it when you smoke it.
Really?
So, yeah, there's one called Chocolope that's from a chocolate tie, and, you know, I was skeptical, but it actually has a kind of dirty, chocolate, earthy taste, you know, and you can smell it when they just hold the bud.
Yeah. So now, I would imagine there's some strains that grow naturally, and then people create some new strains from those?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, most of the strains that we find at dispensaries nowadays are hybrids, crosses between indica or sativa, or have some sort of mixed genetics. There are a few strains, they're very rare, that are pure strains. Like there's some pure African strains that you can find at, one dispensary I know of. Mm. And there are some pure, like, Pakistani strains that are around. But really, pretty much everything's been affected a little bit.
Right.
So that's why these guys go out and look for these pure strains.
Yeah. Mm. That's interesting. Now, I was wondering about hash. Is that pretty much created from the same plant?
Oh, yeah. It's all when you look at the flowers, when they're dried, they're like those nuggets, and they have shiny little hairs on them,
right,
which is where all the
The THC.
The THC and actually all the other chemical resins are all the chemicals are in the resin. And hash is just they either use ice water or they just shake it and they knock those hairs off. Mm. And that's what hash is.
Really?
It's just the hairs. There's no plant matter.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So a lot of people prefer to smoke hash because you're not getting any kind of plant matter at all. You're just smoking the pure, you know, resin of the flowers.
Right. So, wow. There's just so much in this stuff, you know, that... Now, what other stuff... you talk about growers as well in the book.
Yeah.
What's involved in growing this? We have obviously many growers in California. Are you, like, allowed for the most part to have, like, a large... area where you grow a lot of plants, or
well, it's one of those funny laws, right? Because you can under California law, you can grow for people for a dispensary. Like everyone who has a card is allowed to grow like 12 plants.
I see.
So growing is actually really difficult. It's, you know, a lot of people, if you're really sick, you have like multiple sclerosis or a bad back or cancer, you're not going to be lugging, you know, cubic feet of soil and earthworm castings around to, you know,
that's true.
So they allow these guys allow growers to grow a certain amount. Usually it's the most you can have is 99 plants, right? Mm. They are some of the most interesting people I've ever met.
Yeah.
I spend a lot of time with them in the book because one, they're funny, they're kind of crazy.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, it's a really difficult thing to grow basically pharmaceutical quality flowers.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Now, is there a difference between what you grow when it's outdoors and indoors? Is there certain strains that need to be grown in a specific area?
There are some strains that are better for outdoors, but you know what's funny is that people are always saying, well, you know, the marijuana I smoked is not nearly as strong as what they have now. Now it's too potent. It's super weird.
Yeah.
But what happened was they wouldn't let people grow it outdoors. They kept busting them. So people started growing it indoors. And when you grow it indoors, you can really control the light. You can really control the nutrients, the water. They pump a lot of CO2 into the grow room, so the plants really flourish. So basically you're pushing these plants to now express their genetic destiny, because all those resins and hairs on the flowers are like the plant's sex life, right?
Yeah.
They're like looking for pollen, they're reaching out. So you give them everything they could possibly want, right? And you're going to make really potent cannabis.
Right.
And so that's kind of the main difference, is that stuff that's grown indoors is usually stronger, and I don't know, kind of just more controlled than stuff that grows outdoors.
Yeah. Now, I would imagine for an average person, it doesn't make sense to grow your own, right? Because how long does it take for a plant from the moment you plant it?
It depends. You know, it usually takes like 3 or 4 months. But
that's all for it to be really big?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they grow pretty fast. And,
wow.
And, you know, they're light sensitive. So during the long summer days, they grow vegetatively. They'll get like 6, 7, 8, sometimes 20 feet tall, depending
really?
On the strain.
Wow.
And then once the nights start to get longer and the days get shorter, they flower.
Mm.
So in a grow room, you can control that, right? You can turn the lights off. You know, the one thing is you can spend, I don't know, $10 for a seed of something really good. And if you just plant it in some nice soil and feed it and water it, you can get like a pound of really good cannabis. And I think there's a lot of people who, like pharmaceutical companies, are like, why are we letting people grow their medicine for $10? It'll last them like 6 months or a year, you know.
Wow. It's like, so for one seed, you can do that, huh?
Yeah.
For one seed, you can get a plant.
Yeah, and they get really, they can be really big.
Now, I've read also that the male plants are not really the ones that get you high, right? It's the female ones?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So you need to know what seeds to get and stuff, right?
Yeah, and a lot of times you need to get a few seeds, and the male plants come up, you just, you know, throw them away.
Right.
But, and a lot of seed companies now in Holland, you know, have feminized seeds, so you have a guaranteed feminized plant, and some of them are auto flowering. They just get to a certain age and they just flower.
Really?
To make it really easy for the, you know, amateur grower, the home grower, something like that. Yeah.
Wow. So now, can you grow it just in your backyard, or does it? It needs a lot of TLC, doesn't it?
To like any plant, like, you know, if you were going to grow a prize tomato or cantaloupe or something, you would give it a lot of TLC.
Right.
And the plants are hardy. I mean, they grow anywhere. That's why we call them weeds, because they just grow. but if you want to grow something really good, you have to, like, care for it. And, you know, I grew a couple plants just as an experiment in my driveway in these big pots. And and one turned out great, and the other one was, like, completely eaten by caterpillars.
Really?
You know? And I was watching that thing, too. And then one day, you know, I'd find one or two caterpillars. I had no idea they'd all burrowed inside.
Wow.
And were killing it from the inside. So
that's funny.
I'm not a farmer.
Yeah.
I admit it.
Yeah. So no, but these farmers obviously are exposed to the federal government. Because, I mean, on TV, I see all the time those agents burning, like, you know, pounds and pounds of marijuana plants and things. But people still do it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, and again, it's like some people are in it for the money and others are really true believers.
Right.
You know? They know that the plant helps people and they're going to provide it.
Right. But it is a big risk. You know, I mean, you're going to sit in jail for that. You know, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. You know? Well, they've got more courage than I do. I'm not.
I know. But I think it would. So do you think we're going to have like coffee shops here and stuff eventually, like in Amsterdam?
I think maybe. I think at least maybe if we don't have coffee shops per se, we're going to have retail outlets, sort of like a wine store.
Right. At least where people can go and hang out and stuff and socialize around that.
Right.
Yeah. Which is, because you really get a special vibe when you go to Amsterdam. You know, I've been there a couple times and I don't see people going out of their minds there. I don't think they're crazy. You know, it doesn't make anybody crazy, so I don't get that.
You know, the only people who go out of their minds there are American college students who eat too many of those space cakes and then wake up in the park or something. It's a totally civilized experience. You know, there's a menu. They're very helpful there. You can sit down. You can have a cup of coffee or a soda or whatever, to go along with it. It's really nice.
Yeah. And the dispensaries, I think, are getting closer and closer to that. You know, eventually they'll just put a table and some coffee and stuff, and you can just hang out there, you know.
Yeah. Well, there's one I visited for the book in Berkeley, the Berkeley Patients Group, and they have they have like a juice bar and a snack bar, and you can like smoke there. And they also, they're very involved in their community. So they have like, you know, Wednesdays will be free acupuncture and Thursdays will be like free massage for anyone who needs it. You know,
right.
So all very, it's very Berkeley, actually.
Sounds good. Now, a little bit about you. Are you originally from L.A.?
I've lived here about 25 years, so maybe longer. But I'm originally from Kansas.
Oh, really?
That's why I'm so wholesome, yeah.
Yeah. Very wholesome. And so what made you move out here?
I actually came to L.A. to go to graduate school in 1984. So I went to the American Film Institute. And
yeah.
I just really love L.A. And I've, you know, except for a couple of years in New York City, I've stayed here and raised my kids here. And
awesome. You know, yeah. And you've been writing. Is that what you do mainly for a living?
Yeah.
You write?
I also teach college. I teach writing for UC Riverside in the graduate school.
Really?
Yeah, I teach fiction and
nonfiction.
Wow, that's
pretty cool. Yeah. Now, do you find that you have to be in the closet sometimes? You don't just advertise to everyone that you smoke pot, right?
Yeah, I actually don't hide it. I don't smoke every day. I'm not like, you know, chronic or anything like that. I mean, you know, but right. you know, maybe once a week or something
right.
with I'm with friends.
It's not a big deal, yeah.
It's not a big deal. I mean, it's you know, I also drink cocktails, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna, you know, and for me there's no difference, and I haven't found any. I mean, sometimes the students think it's pretty funny. Like,
yeah.
"Dude." You know, but I mean, you know, I think that if we started rounding up all the college professors who smoke pot, there wouldn't be anyone teaching.
Yeah. And they don't do drug testing or anything on you guys, huh?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah. A couple of other questions I had. Damn, I just escaped me. But, do you have a website?
I do.
Yeah,
I do. You can go. There's a Tumblr page for Heart of Dankness. I think it's heartofdankness.tumblr.com.
Okay. And the book, of course, is Heart of Dankness, and that's you can get that on Amazon, I'm sure, in other bookstores
Fine
as well.
Fine booksellers everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a good book, you know, and it did get great reviews, so you can't go wrong with this one. Finally, I wanted to ask you, so are you going to, about your other novels, why don't you plug those as well? or not the other novels, but the novels, because this one's not a novel. But are those surrounding marijuana as well?
Only one of them.
Only one.
Called Baked is kind of, it's about a guy in L.A. I mean, the story is pretty funny. It's a guy in L.A. who's a botanist, grows a strain, and he thinks he could win the Cannabis Cup. So he goes there, and, you know, because it's a novel and I can control the outcome, he wins.
Right.
And when I was researching that book and I went to the Cannabis Cup, I met these guys from L.A. who'd grown a strain and gone to Amsterdam and won.
Uh-huh.
And now they're one of the biggest seed companies in the world, and they're millionaires.
Really?
So
wow.
It's like, hey, life imitates art. But my books are comic novels. I get compared to Carl Hyacin a lot. But this is the only one about, Baked is the only one about marijuana. You know, one is Salty is about a heavy metal millionaire on vacation in Thailand whose wife is kidnapped, you know, and
uh-huh.
stuff like that. And they're all pretty silly.
Sounds interesting, though. I mean, you know, it sounds fascinating to me. And so it's okay. So it was on Tumblr, right? And we'll have a link for your website on our website. So if those of you who didn't get it, you'll be able to link to there. And let's see what
cool.
else. Yeah. There was one other question I wanted to ask you. I knew I would, like, you know, not get all of them in because this is such a deep subject, you know, and there's so many different aspects to it.
Right.
And I wanted to ask you, you have kids and stuff. Now, how do you feel about that? I mean, do you feel that you may not want them to get into this, or are you okay with them?
They've experimented, you know. I mean, my daughter will be mortified when I say that. You know, she visited me in Amsterdam and we went to a coffee shop together.
Mm-hmm.
They've experimented. I mean, I think almost all people do, and you know, I think it's just like if they, you know, they both like to have a drink every now and then too. It's just as long as they're responsible,
right?
And they don't become, you know, drunks or complete stoners
or
get involved in, you know, obviously I wouldn't advocate them, you know, taking cocaine or heroin or things like that,
because right.
it was obviously unhealthy. But as long as they're responsible, moderation in anything, right? I mean, you can eat too much deep fried food and it'll kill you, so you just have to be careful.
Right. All right. Well, everybody, Mark Haskell Smith, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You're a lot of fun and full of information. And everybody, go and get Heart of Dankness. That's about it. Mark, thanks again.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. And we'll see you all on Monday.
been listening to Sam in the Morning with Bridgetta, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Sam in the Morning with Bridgetta is an LA Talk Radio production where we say what we want.